This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
I am Jack Ebling, and this is News Talk 870 Sports, and we'll be here for the next 55 minutes, and I will be here all week, filling in as various co-hosts take their turns in Earl Robinson's chair. And our co-host today, Mike Griffith, covers Michigan State basketball and especially football for MLive, and has a big background in college football and basketball, covering the Southeastern Conference. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Jack. How are you?
Just fine. Now, we have some tickets we're going to be giving away a little bit later in the show for a Michigan State-Minnesota game on Wednesday night. And if you can play guard, Tom Izzo wants to talk to you right now because he has some injury problems. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. But the number to call in for the tickets, 884-4783, 884-4783. And, of course, we also invite your calls. So give us a call here. And if you have anything that you want to ask about the Super Bowl, about Big Ten basketball, signing day coming up, a lot to talk about. It's a very busy week. Mike, did you watch the Super Bowl intently last night, or was it just kind of on in the background for you?
No, I tried to watch it intently. I found it maddening, frustrating exercise, really. The game, the pace of the game was kind of up and down. I didn't think we really saw either team's best. The commercials were a letdown. I call it the big letdown in the Big Easy last night. I was disappointed, with the exception of Beyonce, I must say. She stole the show. I mean, quite literally stole the show.
I thought between Alicia Keys and Beyonce, I mean, the entertainment that they brought out for this, Jennifer Hudson with the choir from Newtown, Connecticut, I thought that was a pretty amazing start to the broadcast. So I was fairly impressed with those aspects of it.
Absolutely.
And I thought it was a pretty exciting finish. Although, well, for most of the game, it struggled to get there.
Anticlimactic, Jack.
Hadn't had that, well, no, it could have been decided either way, right?
Biggest missed call in the history of the Super Bowl. And the explanation that, well, this is a championship game. You don't call that. Really? Somebody get on the horn and tell Pat Narduzzi in Michigan State that. Because that pass interference call against Nebraska was nothing compared to what we saw last night. It was just absolute missed call. There's just no good explanation. Everybody wants the storyline. Everybody wants Ray Lewis stomping around and praising God and saying that God, listen, I don't want that. I just want the game officiated fairly and let the chips fall where they may. And next time, New Orleans might even manage to pay the power bill on time.
You know, Steve Grinzel of MSUSpartans.com worked many, many years for Booth News Service. And he is still complaining about John Clowerty, the official in the 1989 Final Four, making a call in the Michigan State Seton Hall game that sent Ramil Robinson to the line. Michigan wins the national championship by a point in overtime. And I'm sure that as a soccer official, he was looking at that and said, that's a play on. But, you know, in a situation like that, last night it wasn't a play on. It seemed like it was a definite grab. How often do we see officials swallow the whistle, or in this case, the flag? They just won't throw it in those situations.
You know, and it seems like there's some, you know, officials who have an affinity for making the call more often. You know, I know Ted Valentine, TV Teddy as we know him, has been known to be a little over the top in big television games and go too far the other way. It can go both ways. I was just sickened, you know, and even more so today to hear the excuses and the people that are throwing Jim Harbaugh under the bus for being upset about it. My goodness, he had every right to come unglued. There were a lot of calls that he had a lot of he's a competitor.
Sure.
And I think
I expected that
Dick
reaction.
Cassetti's sure. The most competitive guy he'd ever coached, and certainly that I think that translates into his team. So just sad that we didn't get the ending that we deserved. Had they scored, the Ravens would have had about a minute and a half left to probably drive for a field goal.
Uh-huh.
That's what we should have seen instead of Ted Ginn showing us his Ohio State education and trying to run back a free punt instead of calling a fair catch and giving Kaepernick a chance to throw it down into the end zone.
I thought it was a very good finish and in many ways a good football game. I thought that Kaepernick and Joe Flacco came up pretty big.
Thought that was a good football
game? Yeah, I did. I really did. I thought it was a very slow start. It was very uneven.
And Kaepernick.
But I thought after the power outage, that was pretty good stuff.
Well, it was the Ravens playing prevent defense and going conservative on offense, trying to hold a lead.
I thought that was some of the best strategy I have ever seen at the end of a game. And we were talking, I was with Earl last night. In fact, we were over at Studio C watching the game. And I said, you know what they need to do here? They're up five, is take the safety. And they did it perfectly, running off all that time. Didn't leave a lot of time left. And by the time the punt, the free kick with 4 seconds left, that was the end of the game.
Well, that, now, I'm not saying that wasn't executed fine. But just as a whole, I mean, how did Kaepernick get there? He got there by running the football. You know what? That guy looked scared last night. And I got sick of the commentator that kept saying, even if he didn't run the football, he'd be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. No, he's not.
Well, I thought the 49ers were outcoached.
Well, they got away
last
from what
night.
They got away from they what
did.
They do.
They did. And when they got down close to the goal line, instead of being in a situation what they were comfortable with, instead of being doing what they had done all year, suddenly they've got him under center. They're doing some things that didn't seem to fit their personality.
Coaches can outsmart themselves. I thought, for whatever reason, when I was thinking about that game last night, and I'm thinking, am I just being too hard on this game? Why am I really lacking the enthusiasm for it? Because
I enjoy
Super Bowls.
Yeah.
You know, I think about the great catch that Tyree made and, you know, Eli Manning. And but I thought, well, was it better than this year's Michigan State-Michigan game? No, it wasn't. Michigan State-Michigan was a much better football game. I know 12-10, people say, what are you talking about, Mike? There was a lot of drama. The Sadler fake punt. Mark, you talk about swallowing the whistle. How about this one? We were sitting next to each other in the press box talking about this, Jack. You got a 4th-and-1 at the Michigan 2-yard line. And
right,
you got
right,
Le'Veon
right.
Bell in the backfield. And what did Mark D'Antonio do?
Kick the field goal.
And so all Michigan needed was a field goal to win. They beat Michigan State.
But talking about the Super Bowl, I thought it was a pretty well-played game. There were only 2 turnovers in the game. It wasn't that sloppy.
I didn't see anything dynamic.
Okay.
It's a big stage.
I thought a 108-yard kickoff return was pretty dynamic.
He was untouched. I mean, if he would have reversed his field and done a little Barry Sanders or some cutback.
You want Marcus Allen, right?
So I wanted something. You know, it's like this. It's like the people that are tuned in today can appreciate this. You got Jack Ebling sitting in that chair. We're expecting some magic.
They're supposed
today.
To appreciate that?
We're expecting some magic. I mean, I'm waiting for the greatness right now.
All right, let's go out to our phones, and we'll see if our callers can give us some magic. The number's 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870 or 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. And let's go out to our phones, and this is Terry from Okemos. Hello, Terry.
Hey, hello there. Hey, I think most of my question answered. I missed the last few minutes of the Super Bowl game yesterday. Just stepped away, and the strategy behind the safety. But you might just clarify the explanation on that.
Right. If they had punted the ball, he would have been standing in his end zone.
Right.
And the ball would have gone out to about the 40-yard line, would have made it much easier.
Presuming
for
he
Hail
got
Mary.
The kick off.
That's right. The punt could have been blocked.
Yeah.
Right. So by doing that, he took about 6 seconds off the clock.
Eight seconds.
Okay. 8 seconds he took off the clock. Yeah. That's even better.
A lot of holding on that
and,
play, too.
And, you know, that's Tom Izzo's college roommate, who was a special teams coach for the Ravens, Jerry Rosbrough.
Okay.
But it was a brilliant move. It changed it from 5 points to 3 points, takes the seconds off the clock, and now Ted Ginn's catching the ball back at, about the 32-yard line, something like that?
If he fair catches it, Jack, they've got six. What do they have? Only 4 seconds. Really not enough time to throw the ball downfield and get out of bounds and set up a field goal. That's why it was so key that he was able to run that much time off the clock. Because if, let's say, you only run three seconds off, now all of a sudden you've got time to run one play. Maybe there's a 20-yard out, and then you got Akers with a 55-yard field goal attempt.
Yeah. Where did the ball land when it was punted?
On the punt, it was close to the 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if it was just in front or just behind the 30-yard line, but
okay,
he got up to the 48 or 49.
Yeah. Okay, got you. Pushed them back quite a way.
Yeah.
And they, how many seconds do they have left? Half a dozen?
There were 4 seconds left at the free kick.
Oh, that's right.
So when he kicked it, of course, the ball does not start until the receiver touches the ball.
Now, if that had been a BCS game with the NCAA involvement and Ted Ginn being from Ohio State, they would have found a way to put another 15 seconds on the clock.
Listen to this guy. He is just ripping the Buckeyes.
I'm just telling you, that's the way it works in the NCAA.
Just because the SEC has had their way with Ohio State.
The NFL's much better. They prefer to champion these guys accused of serious crimes.
Well, I appreciate the education. Thanks.
All right. Thanks so much, Terry. All right, we want to remind you that if you're interested in these tickets for the Michigan State-Minnesota game, Wednesday night, Brussels Center, that should be a pretty good game.
Mm-hmm.
You can call 884-4783, and we're going to have a drawing toward the end of the show. Most valuable player of the Super Bowl last night was
Oh, wow. You put me on the spot early, Jack. Honestly, I'll tell you, the guy that I thought was the most valuable player was Reed. Okay. I thought he made some. I thought early on, I thought he set the tone, had the big hit on the tight end.
Yeah.
I think that factored later when the tight end short-armed the ball on that final 49er drive. I thought that was a catchable pass.
Yeah, the interception.
I thought Ed Reed made the difference. I thought he was the enforcer.
Doesn't he look like Grady from Sanford and Sons?
Boy, he doesn't hit like him, though. My
gosh. Boy, he is old. He looks old.
He's got the gray patch in his hair, but, you know, an old Miami Hurricane, just a guy that really set a physical tone, and I felt like Kaepernick was intimidated and didn't run the ball like I thought Kaepernick played well. I
thought the play calling was poor for San Francisco.
Yeah, but
and
sometimes
I thought they took him out of the game. He had opening.
He could have run.
Late in the game, he should have run. They should have had him back there and spread the field and run a quarterback.
That's his call, though. I don't think you draw that up.
That's his call. Don't you think that call was given to him?
Well, I think
he didn't call that play.
No. I think when the play breaks down, I think he always has the options to turn it upfield.
Right.
And I thought there were a lot of opportunities where he could have and should have. And I'm not really sure why, other than the fact that maybe he was a bit intimidated by the stage or the Ravens, or he wanted to, you know, even on the pass that went into the flats on third down. Yeah. I thought he could have tucked it and at least gotten to the 2 yard line. I don't understand that. I think of Tim Tebow, and I see a guy that does everything in the world to win games. And people don't like it, and it's not pretty, and it doesn't fit into this conventional style that the experts seem to think is the only way to win in the NFL. But you know that guy's leaving every ounce on the field, and I don't always see that with other quarterbacks that are mobile. I mean, Andrew Maxwell struggled with that this year. We talked about it. To me, the quarterback is like your point guard, is your team cap. That's the guy that's got to be willing to leave it all out on the field every way possible.
What set San Francisco apart for the last 10 games?
The mobility of their quarterback.
There you go. So why does San Francisco take that away? I mean, obviously, the Ravens were looking for him, and that's why Frank Gore had some running lanes and things. They did not want Kaepernick
on the straight option.
Right. But there were ways to do that by spreading the field, giving him running lanes. His strides are about 4 yards long. So it would have taken him 3 steps, and he would have been at the goal line. I just thought he should have handled the ball.
And they pointed out that the Ravens' front four, especially after they lost Nada, their tremendous run stopper in the middle, that was not a mobile front four.
Right.
There was many yards to be had there had he gone with the same things that got him there, so to speak.
And who was the most valuable player of the game? You said Ed Reed.
I thought so, yeah.
The decision, of course, you knew it was going to be Joe Flacco. It's always going to be a quarterback. They wanted that storyline. The only thing they would have wanted more than that was if Ray Lewis had somehow made an interception, and I got so sick of that storyline.
And he still got on the stand afterward to tell everyone how God wanted him to win.
I thought he played a poor game.
He missed about seven tackles. He wasn't Manti Te'o, but he, you know,
the most valuable
wasn't his
player
best
of this game
either.
To me, clearly, was Jacoby Jones. He had 290 yards. That was a Super Bowl record.
That's a good point.
He had a 108-yard kickoff return where he just blew by everybody. He had a touchdown where he made the catch. It wasn't an easy catch. He went down. He had the presence of mind to get up, eluded two guys. If he'd stayed down and gotten touched, they would have had a chance to make a stand, hold him to a field goal. That would have been very important.
And you know what those two guys have in common, by the way, Ed Reed and Jacoby Jones? They're both from New Orleans.
Oh, there you go.
Hometown
Perfect.
Guys.
Homecoming.
I would have thought so, but you're right. The camera likes the quarterback, and I thought Flacco played very well. You know, he didn't make any mistakes.
I thought something else that was interesting about this. Now, the Ed Reed argument kind of shoots it because he's from Miami, from the U. But Joe Flacco, small college guy from Delaware. Do you know where Jacoby Jones is from? Nobody does. He's from Lane College. I'd never heard of Lane College. If you asked me right now, I couldn't tell you where it was. But I can tell you that it's proof, and there's no better time to point this out than signing day, coming up on Wednesday, that if you are good, the NFL scouts and now the NBA will find you. If you can play, you can make it in this league, you can help them win, you're going to get a shot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm sure Michigan State fans are hoping that with their class ranked 35th in the country right now. Hoping that D'Antonio was able to find a few hidden gems.
We'll talk a little bit more about this later in the show, too. But in talking with Tom Lemming and some of the other recruiting analysts, which I know you've done a million times, it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that whichever schools recruit you, suddenly, if you were a 3-star, you're a 4-star.
Right.
You go up based on the schools that are recruiting you, Because as Tom will tell you, you know, and as much time as he spends, he really does try to put in the effort and travel around the country.
There's a few guys that really do their own homework.
But
yes.
He's still a mailman, okay? He's not a football guy. So that's kind of the situation there. We will be back in just a moment, and we're going to be talking with Jerry Green, sports icon, longtime columnist for the Detroit News, and he has seen every Super Bowl. He is in New Orleans right now. He might be on a tour bus as we speak. We'll be back. Stay tuned for more Sports Talk after this short break on AM 870.
On Talk of the Nation, we tackle the day's issues and discuss the topics that matter to you. We take the time to explore every angle of a story, and we do it all live with your help. Find out what everyone is talking about. I'm Neil Conan. Tune in and join the conversation next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That was Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
It's good to have you with us. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. 1 to 2 inches of snow today. The high, 22 degrees. Tonight will be partly cloudy, and the low will be 5 above. 2 to 4 inches of snow in tomorrow's forecast. The high Tuesday, 28. Partly sunny and 29 for a high Wednesday.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I am Jack Ebling, co-host today, Mike Griffith of M Live, and we're talking Super Bowl. We're talking a little bit Big Ten basketball, signing day coming up Wednesday. But, Mike, whenever anyone has a streak, I think it's very impressive, and I really respect longevity. And when someone has seen every Super Bowl, you're talking about 47 for 47. He is a fountain of information and, of course, has done great work with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and want to bring in our good friend Jerry Green. Hello, Jerry. How are you?
Good morning, Jack, or good afternoon. It's a lovely day here in New Orleans, and the aftermath, and the city is quieting down. It was a tremendous ball game. They have had so many good Super Bowl ball games in the last few years. There's a little bit of noise in the background. I am on a tour bus. I become the consummate tourist the day after the Super Bowl.
Well, you have seen, 10 games now in New Orleans, 7 at the Superdome and 3 at Old Tulane Stadium.
The old ones in Tulane Stadium, which, very frankly, the lights never went out in Tulane Stadium. Funny things happened in Tulane Stadium, which is also known as the Sugar Bowl. And Super Bowl IV, the first one here in New Orleans, they tried to reenact the Civil War, and they had horses on the field, and they started shooting the muskets with blank gunfire, and the horses bolted, and the whole program was messed up because of that. That was very funny.
I thought you were going to say the horses left souvenirs all over the field.
That was what I thought, too.
Well, that might have happened, too. I didn't expect that. That is not my area coverage.
47 straight Super Bowls. Mike, when you think about somebody having that kind of record, it's truly amazing. Jerry, how many guys can say that? I know you had a band of brothers. How many are still showing up at these games?
Well, we are not certain, frankly, because I did not see Dave Klein, who started in 1967 with us as one of the newspaper men, and he had continued as a blogger, an internet guy.
Right.
And none of us saw him. So we are saying now there are just 3 writers who have covered everyone.
3.
One of them.
Wow.
3 writers, and Edwin Pope of the Miami Herald.
Right.
Jerry Eisenberg of the Newark Star Ledger, and Jerry Green of me, of the Detroit News, and basically all 3 of us go back into active duty when it is Super Bowl time.
So, Jerry, after seeing 47 Super Bowls, I got to ask you, how would you rank this one? It just rated just as far as the game, the product. How did you feel that game played out compared to all the other ones you've seen?
Well, this has been one of the top games. For excitement, for competition, The storyline has been superb. I would say this was the best storyline since Joe Namath won in Super Bowl III.
Wow.
For a very simple reason. You have two brothers who grew up in the same house in Ann Arbor. You have two brothers who shared the bedroom. I'm sure they played games. They were 15 months apart. They were hotly competitive. And suddenly here you have them coaching against each other in a Super Bowl. And, people say it's the largest event in the world, sporting event in the world. I'm not sure that's true. I think the World Cup soccer might be bigger, but it is one of the biggest, and certainly it's America's premier sporting event. And
it did set rating records on television, too, the CBS broadcast.
It set rating records on television. I haven't seen the ratings. I'm still a newspaper guy. I don't really think it was TV ready in that vein all the time.
Hey,
you
Jerry,
know me, Jack.
I have to ask you about the Harbaugh story, because you knew Jack Harbaugh back when he was a longtime Bo Schembechler assistant, and then had a shot at Western Michigan. He was, of course, Western Kentucky is where he was the coach when Tom Crean was down there as assistant basketball coach, and best move he ever made was finding Joni Harbaugh. But in terms of what Jack was thinking last night, Jack and his wife Jackie, what do you think was going through their minds sitting there watching the end of that game?
Well, it had to be bittersweet. I mean, they felt great for John. They were very proud of John. And they felt bad for Jim, especially because of the comeback Jim's 49ers made and almost won the game. You know, they got within 3 points at the end and 5 yards, really.
Right.
And in the end, it was the Colts. I keep saying the Colts. that's dating me. It's the Ravens played enough defense to hurry Kaepernick, and he missed 3 straight passes at the end. And otherwise, the 49ers would have won, and Jim would have been the winning coach. So I think the Harbaugh family had a great deal of pride. I know they had pride. I'm going to pass this on. I haven't ever written it, but back when Jim was playing football for Michigan, 1986.
Okay, his senior year.
When he guaranteed a victory over Ohio State,
right,
an underdog Michigan team beat Ohio State in Columbus, Jim, I wrote a story. I wrote positive stuff sometimes, even though I had a reputation for negativity. I wrote proudly about Jim. He was fun to watch. And I wrote that. And lo and behold, I got a letter in the mail thanking me for what was written about Jim Harbaugh from his mother. Thank you for writing about my son that way.
Huh.
And I still have to meet Mrs. Harbaugh. I certainly hope I thanked her for it. And that kind of letter I have received once in the 56 years that I have been painfully employed in journalism.
You know, Jack Harbaugh, Jerry, always would stand up in front of his team, and Jim has picked up on this and say, who's got it better than us? Nobody. And I think in the Superdome yesterday, that's exactly the way the Harbaughs felt.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they had to be extremely proud.
And the daughter just happens to be married to the coach of the number one ranked basketball team in the country, so she didn't do too bad contributing either.
That's from Indiana, yeah.
Right.
I'm aware of that, which is also good. Now, the only thing I could remember in football that could be an equivalent of this is Michigan playing Illinois, Michigan coached by Bump Elliott, and Illinois coached by his older brother, Pete.
Pete Elliott, right.
The late Pete Elliott, who died within the past month.
Right.
And that is the only thing I can remember that's close to that. Of course, the Mannings playing quarterback against each other. But that's happened. It's probably happened in college a lot. And but it has not. It never happened in the Super Bowl, and nothing could ever match this. Certainly, brothers could play against each other sometime years from now, but there'll always be. This is what the Harbaughs did in 2013.
Jerry Green, a longtime iconic sports writer and columnist for the Detroit News, our guest. And he has seen every Super Bowl going back to Vince Lombardi in Super Bowl I against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I was trying to think of strategy in this game, Jerry, and I thought that until this game, the best piece of strategy I had seen was New Orleans opening the second half with an unanticipated onside kick. But I thought it was absolutely inspired at the end of the game last night to take that deliberate safety, run the time off the clock, and then have the free kick with 4 seconds to go, preventing the Hail Mary.
I totally agree with that. And, you know, but the onside kickoff that the Saints pulled and helped them win the game against Indianapolis a few years ago had a total element of surprise. This did not.
Right, right.
I mean, I saw the kicker back there, and I said to myself, he's going to kneel in the end zone or do what he did, which was do a hot foot dance as long as he could through the end zone. I think he was trying to get four more seconds out of it, but it worked.
Worked out all right.
You know, I wrote something about it wasn't John's two-point gifted Jim. It was strategy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. 877-952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870, the number to call. And let's go out to our phone lines. We have a question for Jerry. This is Ed from Flint. Hello, Ed.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Jerry, a longtime reader and a longtime admirer of your writing talents. And it's an honor to talk to you on the phone. And I apologize ahead of time. I just jumped on the show here about 10 minutes ago, and if you've already touched on this topic, I apologize. But, Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, but you attended Brown University, and you had a classmate by the name of Joe Paterno. And I just wanted your thoughts on the situation as it developed at Penn State and how it all played out. And I'll just hang up and listen to your response on the air. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, a lot of people would not remember that, but Ed, I'm glad you brought that to mind. Jerry, I don't know if you could hear the question. We lost you for a second.
I did not. I got temporarily disconnected.
Yeah, Ed's question had to do with what happened at Penn State, remembering that you had a relationship at Brown University with Joe Paterno as a classmate. Now we're really going back. And wanted to know how shocked you were by the way that whole thing unfolded.
I was shocked, yes, not because of what Joe did. I was very disappointed for whatever involvement he might have had, and I was very disappointed the way what I believe Penn State did, which was throw him under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I look at what the NCAA did, and it wiped out football games that I know I saw that people paid good money to see, and said actually those games never happened. You didn't see a football game that day.
Yeah, I'm going to say something that's going to be very unpopular with a lot of our listeners here, what's new, right? But in terms of the law of unintended consequences, I think there were a lot of innocent people punished. And I don't just mean the children who were abused by Jerry Sandusky. That was about as evil and heinous as you can get. But in terms of the other people who were at Penn State, who had no idea of what was going on, who were not involved or implicated in this in any way, and suddenly there's a blanket over the entire program, that era, and suddenly Joe Paterno has gone from the all-time icon who did as much for a school as anyone could to being persona non grata, and good luck trying to find a statue.
And the people punished that weren't even at Penn State.
Exactly.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. I thought it was a case of grandstanding by the NCAA.
Well, I thought it was Overkill, definitely.
Jerry, I have to ask you about the Pro Football Hall of Fame, because I know that you've had a role there and a very important one in honoring the game's greats. Very, very difficult assignment and a tough club to join. I look at the list every year when the nominees come out, and I try to cut it down, and I usually always have about twice as many on my first ballot as I should. But what do you think of the process and the group that went in this year?
I thought it was I wasn't thrilled by it. I'm glad Chris Carter got in. I'm glad Dave Robinson got in. I thought for years that Dave Robinson had been in, because he was on the Hall of Fame board and works for them down in Canton.
Right. How about Bill Parcells?
I would say it's about time he was in. I have other people who I believe should be in who can't even get on the ballot.
Who should be in? Who's the biggest slight, the biggest oversight?
Well, you know, Jack, I live in California now. I belong to a group called the NFL Alumni Association of the Coachella Valley, which is Palm Springs to Indio area in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And I'm a member of this group with Tom Flores, whom I see once a month. Tom Flores won twice as many Super Bowls as Madden and John Madden. And I think Flores definitely should be in, and I mentioned it to people who are on the board now, the election board.
Right.
And they turn a negative face on it.
Hmm. Well, let me take it one step further, Jerry. What about Tim Brown? I thought Tim Brown was a much more effective receiver than Chris Carter. I mean, he was a threat all over the field every game, regardless of how good his teams
were.
They're
both good. Chris Carter caught 130 touchdowns.
Yeah, but Tim Brown's going to get in.
Yeah.
Tim Brown will get in. They have to limit it to seven, and the rejection process is grueling. That room is, I haven't been in it for several years now, 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
That room is contentious. Everybody has an agenda, and they're trying to get the guy from his town in.
Right.
And Tim Brown will get in.
I thought it was very appropriate that Jonathan Ogden should get in as being one of the great offensive linemen of all time. Just so happened he got the loudest ovation being with the Ravens. But if you play in the league 12 years and you're first team all-pro 9 times, you're 11 Pro Bowls, I guess that speaks for itself.
The Lions had an offensive tackle named Darryl Sanders many years ago when I was first covering. And he referred to himself as anonymous. We're anonymous offensive linemen.
Right.
And it took Tom Mack 15 years to get in. Hmm. And certainly he was good enough playing for the Rams. I can mention a Michigan guy on the Michigan State station.
Absolutely.
And Tom Mack got in. I think Jim Otto got in.
Yeah.
The center, Jim Langley, who played for the Packers and the Dolphins.
Right.
Jerry, getting back to Flores, why do you think he's not in? Do you think it's immediate? You know, I look at Chris Carter, and I can't help but think his affiliation with ESPN had something to do with it. Does Flores not have enough friends in the media?
I think that sure as the devil helped Chris Carter get in. Being in the media like that, I think that helped John Madden get in.
Probably helped Warren Sapp get in, and he's all over television now.
Well, I can't recall seeing Warren Sapp on TV.
Yeah, he's all over the NFL Network now. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. I am not blessed to have the NFL Network where I live.
I'm not sure if that's a blessing or a curse, Jerry.
Well, I could be, too. I just hear things about Warren Sapp. He was a very good football player. Whether he was a great football player, I don't know. Peter King of Sports Illustrated, who had a lot to say at these meetings, keeps talking about it. It's not the Hall of Very Great, the Hall of Fame. And I agree with that.
Right.
I agree with that.
Jerry Green, our guest, longtime sports columnist for the Detroit News. Jerry, I know that you're on a tour bus. You've got a lot of things to do here in New Orleans. But I have one more question I need to ask you, and it has to do with the future of the National Football League. I don't know if you were at Roger Goodell's press conference the other day or whether you were teaching Beyonce how to sing. But I did want to ask you about the concussions and the lawsuit that all these players are joining together and how this is going to change the game we know.
Well, you know, it's going to have a strong impact on the game, at least for a while. You know, the fines Goodell is dishing out are obsessive, I think. They're mm-hmm. huge. They're too large. On the other hand, I think the game has to be toned down a bit. Yesterday's game, you know, other than the blackout and the brothers pushing against each other, yesterday's game was brutal.
Yeah.
It was a brutal, hard-hitting, smashing football game.
Yeah.
There were a lot of calls that should have been called that weren't. Even I could see some way up from above in the press box.
Would you have called that last penalty on the pass in the end zone? This is your referee's test.
I thought there was interference involved.
Yeah. You and everyone else.
Holding, or defensive holding. I did not see the replays. I mean, that is what I refer to as deadline time.
Right, exactly.
Someday,
people don't understand what's going on with
the
that.
Entire Super Bowl without thinking about having to write about it until the game is over and I can go down to the locker rooms or go down to the media area.
You wouldn't know what to do. 47 years, you've done it the other way.
Well, I haven't. At the beginning, the Detroit News was an afternoon paper.
Oh, there you go. So you could do those things, right?
You know, and I mean, the first game for me was perfect. There were about six guys standing around Vince Lombardi, and he was flipping. Remember, they used two different footballs, the American Football League ball and the National Football League ball,
right.
And Lombardi was flipping it, and he finally answered that the NFL ball was a superior ball and that the NFL was a better league and so on and so forth.
Right.
And it was a great story. But we were in there talking to Lombardi, and I don't think there were more 8 and 10 guys there.
Well, you've seen it all from Joe Namath making his prediction, his guarantee of the win over the Baltimore Colts, and 46 other Super Bowls along the way. And, Jerry, I hope we'll talk to you next year after number 48.
Well, I sure hope so. I hope I'm not on a tour bus at that time. But whatever.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And, okay, say hello to Earl Robinson for me.
Will do.
He's a favorite.
All
okay.
Right. That is Jerry Green, the iconic sports columnist of he worked in Detroit for close to 60 years, Mike. Think about that.
Now, there's some kind of medal for that.
Yeah, I would I would think so.
I don't know if I can handle Detroit for 48 hours.
All right, we are going to have these tickets to give away shortly. The number, 884-4783. Give us a call, 952-7870. That's 877-WKAR-870. Or 355-9527. That's 355-WKAR. Michael and Todd, you're up next. And we'll be right back with more. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR 870 AM.
On the next Fresh Air, Andrea Stewart talks with us about tracing her family tree back to the sugar trade in Barbados, where,
you know, one side of my family had owned another.
Stewart's family included slaves and slave owners. Her new book is Sugar in the Blood. Join us.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio. Let's go right back out to our phone lines, waiting very patiently. We didn't want to put an extra caller on because we don't want to take a chance of losing Jerry again, but appreciate you staying on the line and waiting. Michael, you're on the show.
How you doing there, Jack?
Great.
But I got to ask you about, I know the Super Bowl was entertaining and everything, and Beyonce did a great job at halftime, but what I want to ask you about this is, Is the Super Bowl is just going to rotate between Miami and New Orleans and warm weather sites, or are they coming back up north again?
Well, Mike, they're going to be in New York coming up. Is that next year? Yeah. No, next year, yeah.
Okay. Because I know Minnesota's going to build their new stadium. They'll probably get the Super Bowl in rotation, too. But I noticed that it's always in warm weather climes. That's why I wish it was being played in January instead of just in February. But I know the TV networks have their rating periods and everything.
The media is hard to please. We want it in warm weather, and so do a lot of the fans who go to these games.
Destination location. Sure. Turn into a week-long event for these cities, and they can make millions off the tourism.
They'll find out something to do in New York, certainly. But I think the weather for the game, they're really risking an awful lot. You know what it was like here last week, and it was very similar on the East Coast. Would you want to play a championship football game? Would you want to decide who is the best team in the National Football League under those conditions?
I wouldn't mind that. I'm more concerned about the fans, and I'd be more worried about the travel.
Hey, Jack, mm-hmm. Here's another question. While I was watching the Super Bowl, I was channel surfing too, and I was watching the Big Ten Network, Basketball and Beyond. You ever going to be on that show?
Big Ten Basketball and Beyond. I'm on the Big Ten Network from time to time, but Mike DeCourcy does a great job on that show.
He does.
And I haven't been approached about being on that show, but hey, if Mike ever wants to take a vacation,
I've heard
he's
some
got
talk,
my number.
I've heard some talk. You're certainly considered Beyond by many people, though.
Yeah, by a lot of people. A lot of bosses I've had over the years.
Also, I was watching the Caribbean World, some of the Caribbean World Series and everything, and I just look at the passion of those people in Latin America for baseball. You know, you always get soccer all the time, like 12 months out of the year. But I know those people in those Latin American countries like the Dominican Republic, Venezuela, and Mexico, and they're real passionate about baseball, mm-hmm. which was just nice to see a foreign country. You know,
right.
We xenophobic over in America because we like the we like soccer over in Europe mostly, but not in South America and everything, but it was just great to see. Also,
right.
Jack, here's one more question I got to ask you.
Good.
Speaking of that geography lesson, you notice Florida is number 2 in the college basketball ratings, and Miami is number 9 now?
How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
Michael, thanks so much for the call. I wanted to address that for a second, Mike, because we can't let college basketball slip away here. We've got a big game coming on Wednesday. We have these tickets to give away. In fact, we got Michigan State, the women's game tonight at 7:30 over at Breslin Center. And if you have not seen Big Ten women's basketball, you won't find a better environment than you're going to find tonight over there. Two very evenly matched teams. But how about Miami? Whoever thought Miami would
Tom
be
Izzo. Tom Izzo thought it.
He did.
One of the first things he said after that game was that's a really good basketball team, and they're going to beat a lot of good people before it's over with. And now they've beaten Duke and went into NC State and won yesterday.
Didn't think they'd beat Duke by 27 points.
Well, I don't think anybody predicted. And I don't think that hurt Tom's feelings either, by the way.
Oh, right.
Although,
or anyone else who's coached against Duke.
I'll tell you what. You know, you mentioned basketball and Michigan State not letting it slip by. Living outside this region, Jack, and I don't know how many of our listeners are aware of this, but, you know, living in the Southeast – being a Michigan State graduate, Tom Izzo is what keeps Michigan State on the map. He does it not only with the way he wins, but he does it with his color. He does it with his media access, and he does it with his personality. And I can't, you know, I know Irvin Magic Johnson did a lot when I was growing up in this area. Certainly everybody associates Magic with Michigan State. But in this day and age, I don't know if there'll ever be another Tom Izzo that'll do as much for Michigan State. Not just for the athletic program, but for the entire image of this university, as Tom Izzo does.
It's interesting you say that, because every school has its own athletic Mount Rushmore.
Correct.
Four figures that belong, that represent the history and tradition, the glory and the glamour of the school. I think Tom Izzo is on that Mount Rushmore.
No question. He's his own Lincoln Memorial, if you ask me, when I compare him to the other figures and the other ambassadors for the school, because Tom does it in an incredibly challenging environment. He does it with great consistency. Does he have a bad day? The answer to me is no.
You know what else he has? He has amazing consistency, and we were talking on the phone the other night. I said, do you know that with two more wins in the Big Ten out of these last 9 games, you're going to have 20 straight years without a losing season in Big Ten play.
Unbelievable.
Think about that. 18 with him and the last 2 with Judd. And every other school and every other conference has had a dip. They've had a decline. Let's go back out to our phones. And Todd, you're on News Talk 870 Sports.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. And I'm glad that you're talking Michigan State basketball and Big Ten basketball in general. I heard what Miami was. What did the Spartans do? Did they flatline, stay where they were at? That's probably what they deserve.
Only went up one spot in the AP poll, and we're still waiting on the coaches poll where they were number 9. I would guess they may drop one there. But
went from 13 to 12.
13 to 12 with a tough loss at Indiana. And a so-so win over Illinois, lost a couple players. But I think Michigan State's about where they should be. They've earned their spot. Tom will tell you they're 18-4 and still scratching their head at, you know, how they can get better. So I don't worry so much about the rankings. But
he said the only thing that he was happy about was the record.
Yeah, and where
not
they're
happy
at
with the play.
Yeah, where they're at. Their RPI will be good. They'll get a good seed. I mean, this is a team that's going to have some opportunities at the end of the year. Right now, the issue is the health of Travis Trice and Gary Harris.
Right. And if that doesn't happen, you're playing guard.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just wondered what's done. But having looked at the Big Ten, you're at the halfway point. Most teams have played 9, maybe one or two have played 8, maybe one played 10. I think the number that's going to get you a share is 14-4. You guys think that's about right? And I think it will be shared.
I don't know if 14-4 is going to do it. I could see a team being 15-3, maybe 14-4. If they offered you 14-4, Mike, would you take it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll just say this. I'm glad the Big Ten tournament's not held in Bloomington because nobody's going to beat Indiana there with that officiating. I've seen two teams go down there now and just totally get ripped off.
Pretty amazing environment, though.
Yeah, it's a good environment. You know, I'll be honest with you, though, Jack. When you know, I went there last week, and it was my first trip, and I didn't think it was louder than the Breslin Center.
Really?
No, I didn't think so. The Izzone, to me, I've only been in one basketball arena that was louder, and that was Allen Fieldhouse in Kansas.
Wow.
But those Izzone students, the role they play in those games.
Well, we tell them to yell at you. That's the instruction before the game.
I'll tell you, there's some pretty wise some wisecracks coming out of there that get under the skin of those players, and Tom loves it. But isn't it great? Isn't it great that Michigan State has the wisdom to allow their students to enjoy the game like that? There's a lot of big donors that could be out there making a lot of noise about that if they wanted to, Jack. But there's some people that are smart enough and wise enough to let college basketball be what it should be, and they take those seats on the concourse level and let those students get down there and enjoy that game and play a role in that game. And to me, that's a really special thing about Michigan State.
You know, that started with Judd Heathcote and Judd's Jungle. And he wanted to create an environment, an atmosphere there. And Tom has just taken it and multiplied it times 10. So now you see the students, and I don't think there's an arena in the country where there are more students right around the court.
No, maybe Duke. But Duke is such a small place anyway. And I have not been in there before, but that's such a small place anyway.
It's a very small school.
Yeah. And
it's the third most popular school in North Carolina. Can you believe that?
It is hard to believe, considering it's a private school. But getting back to my point, as nice as Indiana was, I think the Breslin Center is a better basketball environment.
Well, I will say that I think, obviously, Assembly Hall has a much longer tradition. But
sure,
obviously,
right.
Michigan State has been extremely successful at home in the – I mean, that would be a number to look up. What Michigan State's winning percentage at home
is – I think Izzo's won 89% of his games there over his career.
That's a staggering number. But I want to bring – like I said,
I can tell you exactly what that is, in fact, Todd. Michigan State is 87.8% at home at Breslin Center. And under Tom Izzo, it's 89.2% success.
That's mind-boggling. I mean, that is an unbelievable statistic in a conference like the Big Ten.
And what makes it mind-boggling is that they have played Duke. They have played North Carolina. They've played UCLA. They haven't hid from anyone.
Arizona. I mean, I've been to a lot of those games. I do think 14-4 gets it. I think, halfway through it. I think, I think Michigan State is, they're going to play a tough Minnesota team, a very athletic, tough Minnesota team that's playing hard. I got to be honest, looking at the schedule, and I don't have them all in front of me, I see Michigan State probably realistically losing in Columbus and losing at Ann Arbor. So I see 14-4, and I do think it'll be shared. But the one thing, and I don't want to nitpick too much, your other gentleman there said something about the refs. When you turn the ball over 19 times in a college basketball game, I'm not saying that the refs help Michigan State, but you don't deserve to win. If you don't value the basketball, you don't deserve to win. And as well as they did play in Indiana, and Michigan State basketball is not a place for moral losses or good losses. I know coaches
past that.
Will use them. But,
I think fans are past that.
Yeah, we've moved past that. And, again, like I said, I'm not saying that the refs did Michigan State any favors. But, again, to me, the key in that ball game was that, and God bless him, he's made up, you know, won them the Illinois game, no doubt about it. When Keith Appling plays that poorly and that team turns the ball over that much, I didn't feel they deserved to win. Could they have won in Indiana?
Right.
Yeah. But I don't think the refs took anything away.
Well, you know, one team tries 20 free throws, another one tries six. It's a 5-point game.
That's Big Ten basketball on the road. That's
right.
Big. I mean, that
doesn't mean it's right.
I mean, Jack's been around longer than me, but if that's going to happen, and it does happen, Illinois could say the same thing, you know, in the Breslin Center, couldn't they?
Sure. Hey, Todd, thanks so much for the call. I appreciate it. You know, I think he's got a good point that Michigan State has been sloppy with the ball. Much too often.
Well, Travis Trice, and, you know, he's a coach's son, but, you know, Izzo made a pretty funny joke today about don't have the tuba playing when he's on that end of the quarter. It'll blow him off the court because he's so light. He's lost weight. It's a weakness. Michigan State has a real problem at backup point guard, whether Trice is out with a concussion or not. He's not effective. He's not.
Brandon Dawson hasn't been good handling the ball. Denzel Valentine, who's a brilliant passer,
like to
has
see
committed
more
a
Denzel.
Lot of turnovers.
You're going to see a lot more
Denzel.
You know, I think it's time. I think he's a great player, and I think he'll blossom. And, you know, Tom's got a method to his madness, and he's managing that kid. And, you know, now Denzel's number's up, and we're going to see what he does against Minnesota Wednesday night.
Hey, we have our ticket winners from the drawing. Paul from Hazlitt and Chuck from Petoskey are the ticket winners, and Aaron will be in touch with you if he hasn't already been, and we'll be sure that you get your tickets for Wednesday's game. Minnesota Golden Gophers, Michigan State trying to get a little payback for the first game of the Big Ten season in Williams Arena. Tom Izzo and his good friend Tubby Smith, and Tubby's had a real hard time beating Michigan State and beating Tom Izzo, even back at Kentucky. I remember, Mike, when Michigan State went in and won at Kentucky and Izzo gave an impassioned plea. The people were kind of down on Tubby Smith. It was as if they wanted to run him out of town. And Tom said, be careful what you wish for. And Kentucky went through some rebuilding times.
Yeah, and some, you know, NCAA potential issues. I mean, Tubby Smith does it the right way, and he's done a great job at Minnesota. I've got a lot of respect for him, just haven't covered him in the SEC and even talking to him at Big Ten Media Days. And, you know, I think Tom respects him because I think he's a really clean coach. I think he's very compliant with NCAA rules.
All right, we've got about a minute and a half left. Give me one surprise for the second half of the Big Ten basketball season.
Oh, boy. One surprise for the second half of the Big Ten basketball season. I'll be honest. I'm still kind of trying to figure it out. I mean, I don't think you're going to see Indiana. I already said I don't think you're going to see Indiana lose at home again.
Already dropped one.
You know, and Michigan's hard to figure. It's such a talented
Indiana
team.
Indiana has to play all its games on the road yet. Has to come to East Lansing, has to go to Ann Arbor, has to go to Columbus.
Gosh, I don't know. Maybe Thad Motto will give credit to somebody outside of his own school. How about that?
You are so anti-Ohio State. You're not going to do script Ohio here in the room. I'm telling you.
I mean, you know, there's just some. You know, it's not that I'm anti. It's just I'm amazed at how much the NCAA's backed. You know,
we need an Archie Griffin call you, get you involved in the Ohio State University Alumni Association.
I mean, there's two rule books, pretty much. I mean, there's one for college and there's one for Ohio State, apparently. You get to have two coaching staffs at once in football.
That's true. That was pretty bad.
That was horrible. You get to have five guys that are ineligible playing a bowl game.
And they were encouraged to do that.
Amazing.
Truly amazing. I want to thank Jerry Green, longtime sports columnist for the Detroit News, 47 straight Super Bowls and counting, our guest. I love to talk to him each year after that game. Want to thank Mike Griffith from M Live, who covers Michigan State football primarily and basketball as well. Does an unbelievable job at the M Live site. We'll be talking with him again soon. And we have a big announcement coming up toward the end of the week. We'll be back tomorrow with much, much more sports talk here on News Talk 870 Sports. I'm Jack Ebling here on a beautiful Monday. I tell you, I saw Earl Robinson last night and watched the Super Bowl with him. He's doing great, wants to say hello to all of his listeners. He also wants to tell you, have a great afternoon.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.